from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As bishops from around the world are gathered in Rome for the Synod of Youth, Pope Francis has accepted the resignation of Cardinal Donald Wuerl of Washington, D.C. Also topping the headlines from Rome this week, a prominent Vatican cardinal confronts the former papal ambassador, Archbishop Carlo Maria Viganò, about his controversial testimony. Edward Penton and Father Raymond de Sousa join us from the Eternal City for a recap and perspectives on the latest news from the Vatican. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by my co-host for Register Radio, Register Senior Editor Matthew Bunsen. But Matthew is also in Rome. Hi, Matthew.
Hello. Great to be with you from the Eternal City.
So it's a show all about Rome today, and both of our guests and you are there for the Synod of Bishops and the canonization of Pope Paul VI and other saints this weekend. But as has been the case throughout the whole synod so far, it seems that sex abuse crisis has really taken over the headlines coming from Rome. And of course, the news of Cardinal Donald Wuerl stepping down has been a part of that overshadowing of the synod and important events like the canonization this week. So it's quite an interesting time there in Rome.
It is. The stories just keep piling up. I just arrived in Rome myself just a few days ago and was quite stunned at how quickly events have been transpiring and sure. unfolding, especially where Cardinal Wuerl is concerned.
Well, soon we'll talk with Father Raymond de Sousa about Cardinal Wuerl's resignation. But first, I want to bring on Edward and talk to him about the Synod of Bishops this week and lots of other news this week. Edward, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good to be with you.
As always, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad you and Matthew can be together there in Rome. So the Synod this week, as I said, has been overshadowed in some way, but what is the latest on the gathering?
Well, we're now into the second week. We're going to the second part of the Instrumentum Laboris. We've had several general congregations. I think we've had 10 already now, which is where the Synod Fathers have 4 minutes to give interventions, 266 Synod Fathers in total. And now, but in between these general congregations are the small circles, and those are where different language groups can thresh out really the issues that have been discussed in the Synod Hall and other issues in small groups. So that's also taken place. And a whole wide range of subjects have been discussed, particularly, sexual abuse has also figured highly. That's been quite focused upon. But beyond that, there's been also obviously the concerns about youth and young people today and their faith, and a lot of talk about listening to them and really talking to them where they are and accompanying them. That's been the constant refrain, if you like. But also it's interesting what hasn't been discussed as well as what has.
Well, let's get to that in a moment. You did have a blog this week on October 9th from Archbishop Fisher. It's his reflection. So Archbishop Fisher, Anthony Fisher of Sydney, Australia, gave you some of his notes from these, I think it was the small groups. He was bringing back to us and to the world some of what happened and what those major points that were being made. Some of it that struck me were speaking about the problems of anxiety and depression and youth just not feeling supported or really, you know, it was this idea of being happy on the outside but unhappy and directionless on the inside and not understanding marriage and not having good role models for marriage or even for vocations. And those were some of the things that struck me. What were some of the other things that he spoke about?
Yes, well, that's something that's been a constant theme here. A lot of it, what I've noticed is young people very much lost in a sense, morally particularly, and they speak about the need for a moral compass. They want mentorship. They want, as Bishop Barron said today at the press conference, there's a strong call for what he called spiritual paternity and spiritual mm-hmm. maternity by young people, and they want models to look up to and mentorship, and that's come across very strongly. And but also they've also been very happy with the contributions of young people here. There's 39 young auditors here who've also had a word, been able to speak, and they've also been very much participating in the Synod Hall as well, and cheering those interventions that they like, and being very much a part of it. And they've been very welcomed, and I think the Synod Fathers have found their contributions very inspiring and uplifting. And somebody said today, he's been to 7 synods. Synod Father said this, and he's never had an experience of synod so full of life and so inspiring and giving a lot of input from young people and a lot of exchanges taking place.
Absolutely, I would imagine there'd be a lot of energy. So that's wonderful. So one of the things that you did bring up was what was not being discussed, and that's always that's always interesting perspective. So what is that you are that really hasn't been a part of the discussion so far that you would have expected to be a part of it?
Yes, well, a major theme, and I've got a piece coming out on this, is about the strangely no mention of Humanae Vitae and the issues of contraception, which of course is a big issue in Western society, and particularly it affects the young, whether it's the effects of contraception directly or indirectly, and a lot of people say that the young are the particular victims of contraception. They've suffered from broken marriages of their parents, which is brought about by contraception, or just in their own relationships. But strangely, that's hardly been discussed. In fact, I think Humanae Vitae hasn't been discussed at all so far. And contraception, I believe, has only been brought up by a Nigerian bishop, but not by anybody else. But chastity has been a common theme in the small groups, and that's of interest. But other than that, but Humanae Vitae hasn't. And that's particularly odd because it's, of course, the 50th anniversary of the encyclical this year.
Right.
And we've got the canonization of Blessed Paul VI on Sunday, which, you know, it was his encyclical that really reinforced the Church's teaching against artificial contraception and really for the Church's teaching on being open to life and procreation and the unitive aspects of sexuality. So that's not been that's been omitted, but it's certainly very interesting that part hasn't been mentioned.
Yeah, Edward, you've also been reporting on the letter of Cardinal Ouillette refuting the accusations of Archbishop Vigano about Pope Francis and the sex abuse scandal. What exactly did the Cardinal have to say, and why is it causing so much controversy?
Yes, well, he gave a very strong rebuttal to Archbishop Vigano, saying that he found it very reprehensible, that he should have written that testimony. He tried to explain what he thought were errors within his testimony. He said that there weren't sanctions that Benedict had issued Cardinal McCarrick, but Archbishop Vigano said there were. But his main concern though was him asking of the Pope to resign and doing it in such a public way. And I think the issue with this letter, though, which I think a lot of people have noticed, is that he doesn't actually refute the main allegation of Archbishop Vigano, which is that Pope Francis was told about the measures being enforced on Cardinal McCarrick by Pope Benedict, but seemingly did nothing to do them. In fact, gave him influence to appoint bishops. That wasn't strongly or really refuted by Cardinal Ouillette. So people are wondering perhaps why did he write that if the main allegation still stands.
And what are we to make of the fact that Cardinal Ouillette never really uses Archbishop Vigano's title of Archbishop throughout this letter?
Yes, that's a good point, Matthew. I mean, it's rather strange that, and nobody knows quite why. There's definitely some theories about that. Also, when he talks about trying to help Archbishop Vigano come back into communion with the Pope. And some people say, well, does that mean that he's not in communion? Does he believe that he's not in communion with the Pope? Obviously, Archbishop Vigano doesn't think that. At least I'm quite certain that he doesn't think he's not in communion with the Pope. But also, the whole lack of the title Archbishop is particularly odd, considering that Cardinal Ouellette is the prefect of the Congregation for Bishops. I mean,
right.
That is a rather strange omission.
I also found it strange that it took so long for this response to come. One of the things that he says, Cardinal Ouellette says in his letter, is just how much derision has been caused by this letter. But it took 6 weeks for any kind of real response to any of the points of Archbishop Vigano's letter to be made, so by the Vatican or by Cardinal Ouellette. So I found that strange. Is there do you have any idea why it took so long?
Well, I think part of it was because Cardinal Ouellette was trying to get hold of documentation. Mm-hmm. And also, it was only in the second testimony that Archbishop Vigano challenged Cardinal Ouellette directly to produce that. Yes, and I think he felt he had to respond then. But it is a shame, because we contacted his office as soon as the first testimony came out to see if he'd comment, but we received no comment at all, not even an acknowledgement. So, and then suddenly he produced this, and it is in many ways a shame that it didn't come out earlier, because it's caused a lot of discussion about what's been true and what's not. And it, in some ways, it has helped clarify certain things, which could have been better known earlier on.
Yeah, so of course, we're still in a holding pattern and a waiting pattern, really, for more information, because everything that has been said in this past week, which has been, thankfully, a response to Cardinal Vigano, Archbishop Vigano, from the Vatican and from Cardinal Ouellette, all of it, though, projects into the future more clarity, is what they're saying. So we're in this holding pattern to know really what the Vatican is going to release. And also during this week, Archbishop Scicluna has been saying that don't expect any answers from the synod on sexual abuse of minors or a vulnerable adult, that really that's going to come in February. So we're still in this very big holding pattern in terms of what Pope Francis is going to be doing in regard to the scandal that has really exploded, at least in the U.S. and in some other countries this year. But Edward, we, as always, appreciate the reporting that you're doing. We look forward to the story about Humanae Vitae and the contraceptive mentality that is often among youth, and why that isn't being presented at the Youth Synod. So we'll keep our eyes out for that, but keep up the good work.
Okay, thanks. Good to be with you guys.
When we come back, we'll be joined by registered contributor Father Raymond D'Souza. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Tim Staples.
The National Catholic Register gives you the world's news like no other. Only NCR has a stable of writers steeped in good Catholic theology and philosophy to give you the news with proper perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner, or call 1-800-421-3230.
Being part of EWTN Media Missionaries is a perfect way to help us fulfill our calling from Christ to make disciples of all nations. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com and join us in sharing the eternal word with the world.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and host of Register Radio. I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host. Matthew is currently in Rome covering the canonization of Paul VI and other new saints, and he'll be staying there to cover the tail end of the synod. Matthew is joined in studio in Rome by Father Raymond D'Souza, who is a longtime Register contributor. Welcome, both of you.
Hi, Jeanette. Good to be with you.
Always good to be with you.
It's been a tremendous week in Rome. It's just been a lot of news, and you guys have only been there a few days. And, of course, the big news on Friday was the resignation of Cardinal Donald Wuerl. And we've kind of been expecting this for some time. He's been signaling that this was coming, but it has now happened. And Father Raymond, you turned around very quickly a commentary for the Register called Cardinal World's Resignation, A Case of Lost Credibility. So what happened here?
Well, I think the first, this is a real tragedy in that, Cardinal World 77, he's been probably 50 years a priest, 30 years a bishop, or more than 30 years a bishop. And the vast majority of that record is very admirable.
Mm-hmm.
Catechetics, Catholic education, the new seminary in Washington. But the summer of 2018, the last 3 months of a 50-year priesthood has been very rough on him.
Right.
This will be presented in the secular press largely as a result of the Pennsylvania grand jury finding fault with some of his cases that he handled in Pittsburgh. In the knowledgeable Catholic press, I think it'll be presented as not that, because people who know that Bishop Worrell then did handle some cases which by today's standards would be considered deficient. But for 20 years, he's been recognized or more as actually a leader on this issue. And he was doing things in Pittsburgh in the early 90s that only 10 years later other dioceses mm-hmm. were doing. So there is the Pennsylvania kind of aftermath, but that's not, in my view, why he resigned. It's the McCarrick issue. When that came out this summer, he maintained very publicly and privately, or at least I mean privately meaning to his own priests, that he knew nothing about it. And they did not believe him. And
right.
for good reason, because it seems now more and more incredible that now what we know was done to Cardinal McCarrick, that he wouldn't have been informed of that. And if you recall the timeline, Cardinal Worrell came in August to see Pope Francis to sort of update him on the situation. And he suggested then that maybe things weren't going well. He may not be able to survive. And Pope Francis very specifically told him, I mean, this was public, not a private source, saying, go back and check with your priests. And Cardinal Worrell did that. He had a meeting with his priests, I think, on Labor Day. And then after that was the announcement, he said, I'm going to go back to Rome and ask the Holy Father to accept my resignation, which is what he did on September 21st, and now October 12th, it was accepted. So he lost the confidence of his priests,
right.
And his priests would actually know that his record on sex abuse in Pittsburgh and in Washington is actually quite good. I mean, much better than most, actually,
right.
with a few notable exceptions. But on the McCarrick business, they simply did not believe he was telling them the truth, that he knew nothing about this until it came out in June. And now we've discovered since those initial statements, that the nuncios in Washington were told, I know you were just talking to our colleague Edward about the Ouellette letter, that confirmed that the nuncios were told that there were restrictions to be placed on Cardinal McCarrick. And it's not possible that they would have done that and not notified the current bishop in the diocese of which Cardinal McCarrick is living and his successor. So I think that the priests there were have good basis for not believing those denials. And I think that's what led to the lack of confidence, in my view.
And Father, is it striking that there was a kind of popular uprising against Cardinal Worrell in Washington, D.C. among the faithful?
Well, that would be, I think, an extension of what I was saying. I don't know to what extent that played a role in his decision. I'm sure it did, if he thinks, okay, and I take him at his word when he said, look, if I'm going to be a continuing instrument or a cause of division and rancor, he's 77, he doesn't have 10 years
right.
to sort this out. So he might have said, well, if I'm going to be that way, I'd prefer to go. So I don't question that. And I have a lot of admiration for Cardinal Worrell. I know in many circles today, the only things remembered about him are from the last short while. I take him at his word on that he could have said, look, I'm an ongoing source of division. But I think the really key thing is that the Pope had asked him about his future, see what your priests think.
Right.
And obviously, after that meeting, he came back and said, I don't have the priests on my side.
And Joan Frawley-Desmond reported on this a couple weeks ago. It was an article titled, After Summer of Revelations, Cardinal Worrell Faces Tattered Legacy and a Future in the Balance. And in this story, she reports a little bit more in detail what happened at that Labor Day meeting, that there were, you know, people, many priests who were calling for his resignation. And it wasn't a totally negative meeting. I mean, there were other times where there were standing ovations for aspects of his legacy. And her article really touches upon the good and the bad, but it kind of has that same conclusion, that there was a loss of credibility and in a way respect for his future leadership. And people make the point that Cardinal Worrell is he has a real business sense. His leadership is one of just sound institutional kind of leadership. And for him to recognize, okay, I don't have credibility anymore. I don't have this strength of leadership. And, you know, I imagine he just knew it was time. And even his whole public demeanor changed, in the last month or so, month and a half. He, instead of being at all defensive, he was actually much more apologetic and humble in his responses, his letters to his priests and to the public. So you could see a change there in the last few months. The last month, I guess.
Well, certainly the letter that he wrote to his priests after that meeting was a very apologetic letter. Actually, you could say he went from apologetics to apologizing. You know, mm-hmm. He wasn't defending his record. Very interesting today, Jeanette, in the letter, very unusual. You know, cardinals resign all the time, and bishops resign all the time. They don't usually get personal letters from the Holy Father published. It's a very complimentary letter from Pope Francis to Cardinal Worrell. And it made a claim, which I must say is brave of the Holy Father, because he said that that your actions on the sex abuse stuff are justified, and that which will earn the Holy Father a lot of negative reaction in Pennsylvania and otherwise. There's a lot of people who aren't interested in hearing anything other than just condemnation on that issue. And I because that's actually true. I mean, the Pope didn't have to say it, but it is true. And that's interesting. He went out of his way to say that on that issue, he defended Cardinal Worrell. Now, there is a slight prevarication in the letter, because he said that Cardinal Worrell, you didn't choose to defend yourself, which he actually did up until August. But anyway, that is that point was being made there. I have to think that Cardinal Worrell has taken on difficult assignments for the Holy See. He's an enormously hard worker. He's a very competent manager. And I think it must be quite shaken to have realized that, you know,
right,
that things had got away from him so soon. And I think with some justification, he did the right thing in asking for his resignation to be accepted. But, you know, a man who served that long, you know, I think he could reasonably think, well, you know, do the last 40 years not count for anything? Or, you know, is the only thing that counts what happened in 1991? But that's the environment we're in.
Absolutely. And, right.
I would take the commentary by Joan that you mentioned. I don't think actually his legacy is in tatters. There are prelates who have far worse records. For example, Cardinal Mahoney. I mentioned him simply because his successor in Los Angeles, Archbishop Gomez, has taken that position. So I'm not giving an editorial view. I'm saying that's a public record. And, you know, obviously, if you talk about Cardinal Mahoney's record, that would be part of it. But the other things that he did are not canceled out. And although this day and maybe this week, this will be the attention, I think in not too long a time, this will be put into a proper perspective on Cardinal Worrell.
Well, and to that point of legacies, do you see the distinct possibility of other prelates to follow, given, is it possible that Worrell could be the first of a domino?
In theory, it's possible. In practice, I don't know, because he's in a very unusual case in that he's the cases of which he was identified as not handling well, which he concedes, were 30 years ago.
Right.
There's very few bishops who were in office 30 years ago who are still in office. He might be the only one. I don't know for a fact, but if he's not the only one, there'd only be two or three in that situation. And in fact, most of the senior bishops in the United States came to be bishops after the Dallas Charter. So a lot of the discretionary decisions that were made before are no longer discretionary. So right.
However, leaves a lot less wiggle room for a number of different
yes, if they made a mistake after that. But I think that the his circumstances of being a bishop in 1988-89 and still being in office 30 years later, you know, there'd be very few. There'll be pressure. There'll be no doubt pressure right. on others. And some of those who are going to face state's attorneys general investigations, if they didn't, observe the Dallas Charter protocols, then almost certainly it won't be a long debate. It'll be a short debate where they have to resign. And remember that this is not the first cardinal who's had to resign over this. I mean, I'm not talking about cardinal law, but this happened to Cardinal Regali, Justin Regali in Philadelphia. There was the Philadelphia grand jury, which was just the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, not the rest of Pennsylvania. And when that report came out, I think it was in the spring of 2011 or maybe fall of 2010, and he was gone the next July. So almost the same dynamic, although I think there you'd have to say that Cardinal Worrell's record was much better than Cardinal Regali.
But, of course.
But in terms of dominoes, Matthew, I mean, I don't know what's coming, but there's always been a few like this already, and Cardinal Regali would be the most applicable.
This doesn't seem necessarily the situation of Chile. But we are out of time. I did want to mention that the two of you are going to be a host of a show with Brian Patrick throughout the next couple of weeks on EWTN in the evening time, right before EWTN News Nightly, and you'll be covering the Synod. So I want our listeners to know about that, to keep watch for this important coverage of the next couple of weeks, and of course for the canonization of Paul VI on Sunday. So thank you both for what you're doing, and enjoy the Eternal City in this very intense time.
Very good. Thank you, Jeanette.
Thank you.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.